weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I question the true intent of my government when it comes to dealing with Saddam Hussein in the Middle East. And once we invaded Iraq and it turned out there were no weapons, I pointed out the lies of my government and I labeled the war that we are waging in Iraq as an illegitimate war of aggression. Now, according to your laws, I could have been prosecuted for sedition. And the amazing thing is, every word I said before the war turned out to be true. So the sedition laws, far from protecting the security of democracies, can actually be used to stifle truth. And that's the biggest sedition of all. Because if you live in a representative democracy that believes in individual civil liberties, that believes in the individual's freedom of expression, the only sedition is silence. And if speaking truth to power is a seditious act, then I say, if they want sedition, let it begin here. Let it begin now. Let it begin with us. But let's not use their terminology. Let's not let them set the stage. This is not sedition, ladies and gentlemen. This is patriotism, the truest form of patriotism, the required patriotism necessary to guide both of our nations through these troubled times. And these are indeed troubled times. We find ourselves at war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and elsewhere. We find ourselves embroiled in a global war on terror. It's funny because, as you rightly said, I am not a pacifist. I'll be the first one to admit it. I'm not proud of the fact that I have rejected pacifism. In fact, I acknowledge freely that I'm not brave enough to be a pacifist. I think some of the most courageous people in the world are true pacifists, but I don't choose that path. I'm somebody who believes that if a threat emerges to myself, to my family, to my country, to my friends, and I can't resolve that threat through nonviolent means, through diplomacy, through discussion, that I am left with no recourse other than to defend myself. And I choose to defend myself with the use of force, and it's not force that's designed to be fair. If I'm going to fight you, I'm not going to fight you on an equal basis. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to terminate your life. I'm going to destroy you. That's what war is about. Let's not joke. Let's not pretend it's something glorious. Let's not wrap it in patriotism. Let's not call it heroic. It's not. War is about killing, plain and simple. War is the worst thing that mankind can do to mankind because it's about mankind killing mankind. Let's not pretend that it's noble. There's nothing noble about taking human life. It's sickening. It's disgusting. It's revolting. And sadly, in the world we live in today, it's tragically necessary in my point of view. Now, I'm a warrior, and I will wage war in defense of my country. I'm not ashamed of that. What I'm ashamed of is people using war for purposes that have nothing to do with the legitimate national defense, with the defense of freedoms and values and ideals. What I'm ashamed of are societies that purport to be societies that embrace democracy. You can't say that you're a society that believes in human values and human rights, and yet you have a tendency to immediately go for the gun every time you're looking for a solution. And yet that's what we find ourselves in today. The values and ideals that my country represents, and also establishes the notion that we are a nation of laws. Due process is required. If you say the ends justify the means, you're saying law is inconvenient, that law is irrelevant, that law can be disregarded at any time to achieve a given objective. And while some people must say, well, wait a minute now, Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, and the rule of law may not have brought justice to Saddam, so we had to do away with it to get rid of him. Where do you draw the line? If you accept the ends justify the means when it comes to Saddam Hussein, what happens when they say, we need to silence Scott Ritter, or we need to silence one of you, and they throw away the rule of law, and they silence us? Once you violate the rule of law, once you establish that there is an exception to the rule of law, once you say that process does not matter, it's a slippery slope downhill, and there's no stopping it. especially in the environments that we find ourselves mutually in today, the environment of fear, the environment of fear based on ignorance. Ignorance is a horrible thing. I say about the United States, I don't want to insult the Australians in the audience. That should be almost every one of you. So I'm not going to lump you in with your Yankee cousins. But I say this about America. For one of the most technologically advanced countries on the face of the earth, we are populated by the single most ignorant people on the face of the earth about the world they live in. We don't understand the world. We don't know how we relate with the world. We're 280 million people, and we think we have a right to dictate how billions of other people live. And maybe, you know, let's say we do have that right. I'm not saying we do, but let's say we believe we have that right. Before we start dictating how other people live, shouldn't we have an appreciation of how they live, where they live, who they are, what they are? We don't. We're ignorant. And from that ignorance comes fear. And that fear creates a situation where they can be exploited. We can be exploited. And I see that happening in Australia just by reading your news, just by touching base with Australians for the last week. You suffer from the same syndrome. Maybe you're a little bit more worldly than the United States is, than the Americans are. But it appears to me that you're, in some ways, equally as ignorant about the situation in the world today because you allow yourselves to be intimidated by threats, by, you know, visions of threats, emerging threats. And you're willing to sell your liberties down the road for the false promise of security. You know, a great American once said that anybody who's willing to give up individual liberties or freedom in the name of security deserves neither. That's Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers, one of the people who helped draft the Constitution. He's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. What is it we fight for? You know, in the United States, what is it we fight for? Rights, values, freedoms. So why would we sacrifice those right up front? That's self-defeating. It's self-defeating. Here we are today trying to find a solution to the problem in Iraq. We're in Iraq. Some people will say it's irrelevant what happened before we got to Iraq. Don't bore me with WMDs, man. That's old news. We're in Iraq. We're neck deep in a quagmire of our own making. It's time we figure out how to get out of Iraq. I agree with the second part. That's time we figure out how to get out of Iraq. It's time we figure out how to solve the problem in Iraq. But think about what I just said. Solve the problem. How do you solve a problem if you haven't defined the problem? You see, a solution void of a definition of the problem is no solution at all. It's a futile exercise. Because what are you solving? You're just out there doing something and there's no reason or rhyme to it. It's reactive, not proactive. So I agree, we need to talk about solving the problem of Iraq. Where do we go from here? But before we do that, let's define the problem of Iraq. And you can't speak of the problem of Iraq unless you address the reasons why we're in Iraq. And one of those reasons, in fact, I would say the only reason, is weapons of mass destruction. Yes, today we talk about bringing democracy to Iraq. We talk about the liberation of Iraq from Saddam Hussein. But these weren't the reasons we went to war. I don't know what John Howard sold you. I can tell you what George W. Bush sold us, that Iraq represented a threat to international peace and security that was of such a great extent that we had no choice but to go to war to get rid of these weapons of mass destruction. We were told there's mountains of them, stockpiles, massive stockpiles everywhere you turn. Donald Rumsfeld, even after we invaded, where are the weapons, Mr. Secretary? I'll tell you where the weapons are, he said. They're to the north of Baghdad, north of, south of Baghdad, east of Baghdad, west of Baghdad. Well, no, Mr. Rumsfeld, they weren't anywhere. They were all gone. But no, that's why we went to war. And now we're being told by our representatives, because it's a little bit embarrassing to build up this huge case for war in Iraq based upon a threat that didn't emerge, didn't exist. Where are the weapons? Turns out they were all destroyed in the summer of 1991. Oops, they say, we got it wrong. Gosh, imagine that. You know, they say that intelligence is a tough thing. It's a tough business. Sometimes we get it wrong, they said. Well, you know, I was an intelligence officer for 12 years. I know it's a tough game. It's tough business. Well, ladies and gentlemen, give you a little news flash. We don't get it that wrong. We don't. We're not that bad. We actually get it generally right at the core. We're generally pretty correct on the direction that things go. We get it wrong on the periphery. We get some of the nuances wrong. But this wasn't an issue of nuance. They said mountains of WMD existed and none turned up. They said Iraq was actively reconstituting programs related to WMD and there were no programs. This wasn't partially wrong, a little wrong. This was totally wrong. And they want us to believe that this is the case. They say, oops, we got it wrong. The beauty of saying, oops, we got it wrong, means that there's no liability for the politicians who voted for war, who sent us off. They said it was done with good intent. We were trying to do the right thing. We thought a threat existed, and my goodness, we got it wrong. You can't get it wrong if you never intended to disarm Iraq to begin with. You know, if you're going to say, oops, we got it wrong on WMD, that meant that you were trying to get rid of weapons of mass destruction. You were trying to disarm Iraq. I will submit to you that the policy of the United States when it comes to Iraq and WMD was never about disarmament. The United States never intended to disarm Iraq. The sole policy objective of the United States since 1990 regarding Saddam Hussein was regime change, and that weapons of mass destruction and disarmament was useful to the United States only insofar as it facilitated regime change. Now, sounds a little bit conspiratorial to me. If I were you, I'd be a little concerned about the speaker you have standing before you and the fact that he's probably going off the la-la land here. But let me defend what I had to say here. Let me give you some material to chew on here. Why would I say something like that? I took a course in college, very interesting course, one of the best courses I ever had, and it was about treaties. And it would always start off the professor handing us a document, the treaty document, and say, read the document. Tell me what it says. So we'd go paragraph by paragraph by paragraph, and we'd read it. We'd say, well, what they're talking about is they want to control X with Y and do Z. We'd say, great. We thought, what an easy course. You know? Then he throws us the negotiation records.